It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And indeed we are. Welcome, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here with us this weekend. And good to see my long-lost companion, my buddy, my show host, co-host, Mike Ward. Good to see you.
Hey, we've both been lost.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I was going to call you Mike Flounder Pounder Ward.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah,
you and the flatfish, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, getting the last of them in here before November.
Yeah, well, it's over with now.
Yeah, but you fished them this last week, didn't you?
Did. Fished me and Mark Candy and Brian Bailey went the last trip of the year.
Looked like...
We did okay. We caught, I think, about 12 or so, but we didn't have that many keepers. I think we had 5 keepers or something, but a couple of them might have been keepers, but we just threw them back.
Bull minnows? Shrimp?
No.
Grubs?
Everything on grubs.
How deep?
I fish with Mark.
Yeah.
You know, and he don't use live bait. He uses only grubs. And, okay. Hey, look, grubs work great.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with the grubs. I can tell you that right
were
now.
Were they deep?
No, they were in like 3 foot,
okay.
4 foot of water. Everything we fished was fairly shallow.
Okay. So it looked like a good run there at the end. And by the way, of course, November, no retention on flounder. So now you know, here we are today. But, October, people run it right up to the edge. And
oh, yeah.
I saw some good pictures. I saw yours and saw some other pictures coming in, people getting after flounder.
You know, I saw probably 8 or 10 other people fishing for flounder.
Okay.
So we weren't the only ones out there. I mean, there's quite a few people fishing for them. Of course, the wind was blowing, you know, 15 knots out of the northeast.
You got to want it, Mike. You got to want it.
Oh, yeah. It was not a great day for the wind, but, you know, we caught a few fish, and that's all that matters.
Good deal. It got me thinking. I mean, oddly enough, when most of my mind is on hunting season, it does get me, you know, that. And while I was out of town, people were sending me some videos from the Delta.
Yeah.
Fishing had picked up.
Yeah, like, it's starting to turn on now.
One of my buddies who will be listening this morning, probably, he's like, hey, man, you need to get on this. I said, hey, man, I'm on the side of a mountain in Utah.
Yeah.
I can't get at it. So.
But the trout are starting to do good.
Yeah, that's what they do. They were bird schools.
Of course, the redfish are killing it over there right now. And the flounder fishing on the causeway is really good.
Yeah. Who was telling me the other day, they were way up the river. And no, they wasn't way up the river. They were way up Dog River.
Yeah.
Like, way up, like fresh portion of Dog River. And he's, you tell you what, it's my buddy Hal Hayes from Ultra Wash. And he said, hey, I just threw plastic worm out there. He said, I was just like burning. This is how you know you're talking about real fishermen. He's like, the wife, it was 10 minutes before they went to go do something or something like that. He had 10 minutes. So he said, ran down there and threw the plastic worm. That's my kind of man.
Yeah.
And he said, he bows up and he said, bass. He comes up, he rolls up a big flounder.
How about that?
So, and you know, our buddy Wayne Miller does that a lot too. He's bass fishing and catches flounder on those. But yeah, what I saw is videos of bird schools. Like, I have not been able to confirm with my own hands since I've gotten home, but I'm ready. I'm ready for it as well.
So tell me about your trip.
And I'll give you the short version.
Me and you haven't talked.
No, we have not. And by the way,
too. You sent me a couple pictures, but we have not talked.
And by the way, too, and I need to lay out the show, which I did. So coming up here in just a little bit, Jeff Stone from Stone Arms is going to join us. We're going to talk about suppressors on deer rifles.
That'd be great.
It's great stuff, so we'll talk with him in a little bit. It was a great time. So, I did not kill one.
Yeah.
You cut to the chase on that. Passed 31 different bucks.
Man.
And I will say, big, like, maybe if you add in some little ones that you couldn't tell, maybe it's more than that, but 31 that were, you know.
Rack bucks.
Yeah, now, could I have gotten to every one of them? I don't know. Let's say, so 31 that I had glass on.
Yeah.
And out of that, I probably felt good I could have gotten to 20 of them.
Yeah.
Like, without a major 3-hour, 4-hour hike and ordeal, you know. So 20 of them. But it was a combination of things. I kind of said to myself, because we flew out. Okay.
Yeah.
And for everybody that, you know, somebody was asking me about the other night. So we hunt public land. We're hunting no kind of outfitter thing. We hunt public land, you know, a unit that took us a while to draw, 5 years to draw out in Utah. it is a unit that it produced, and I'll show you some video at some point. I have a friend out there, his trophy room, some monster bucks. But so I had that on my mind because we flew if I killed something, now people with his church would have taken the meat.
Right.
And why didn't he guide me? Because his daughter had a tag in another unit in Southwest Utah, and they were down there with her hunting.
So he wasn't able to guide you.
He rode us around and gave us some,
right,
you know,
some
and we'd text every day. Hey, what'd you see here? What'd you see there? I mean, I had some help, but still, there's 600 something tags on this unit. Now the unit's huge. Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's 300,000-400,000 acres, 500,000 acres, so it's big. But there's pressure.
Sure.
There's pressure in there. But you know, because we flew, I was like, well, it means I'm going to have to drop the deer off of the taxidermist. I mean, there were a lot of things, you know. I wasn't going to just skull out a rack and throw it in the back of the truck.
Right.
So it also maybe I knew what was there, and I said, you know what, I need to shoot a mule deer as big as one I've killed before, when I killed in Colorado, or bigger.
Right.
Which is not a giant, you know, but I mean, 140-inch mule deer. I mean, it's big for whitetail world, but it's not.
Right.
I mean, these guys, I put my hands on some of their deer they killed during muzzleloader, a 198 and a 205.
Now, that's mule deer.
That was something.
That's a keeper.
Yeah, that keeper. So, yeah, so I got to the point where we just, you know, and we're kind of, you know, my buddy I hunted with, we're kind of being, you know, just selective. And it's funny. I mean, we glassed one set of bucks, three bucks, and the biggest of them was right on the edge, like, we glassed the fur off him and the antlers off him. We looked at him and looked at him again and wait for him to turn, you know, just, and we'd watch him feed in the morning, lay down in bed, get up midday, move around for 30 minutes, bed back down. We had eyes on him the whole time. And so local guys in there in that unit, that later, I think that was opening day or Sunday, open on Saturday. So it's either Saturday or Sunday. Local guys come in and we see them come in on a ridge above. Like, we're on one ridge looking at this other ridge. They're on that other ridge with the deer, but above them.
Yeah.
And they see them. They shoot the young, the smallest of the three bucks.
Really?
And, you know, and I asked my buddies out there in Utah, I said, you know, is this, it takes, even for a resident, it takes a few years to draw it. It's not like every year. And he said, man, he said, there's just people out there. And I don't know if they, bad shots, didn't see the other bucks, but he said, this is a unit that produces 200-inch mule deer.
Yeah.
He said, there's some people. Now, I understand if it's an every year tag, you're a local guy, you're just getting your meat, whatever, but it takes them a few years. And I saw, I mean, people drop some hammers on some little mule deer bucks.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same way in Kansas. You don't understand it, but they don't care about the horns like what we are, do. We go all the way out there to kill a deer with horns.
Right, but if I got.
They don't care.
But, you know, if you could get it every year, it's kind of my life. If you get the tag every year, I'd get it. Like, hey, it's that time of year. I got. You know, relatives in Pennsylvania where I go hunt, right? My people, and there's a few that are hunters, but most of my family are, they hunt. Like, they go opening day or two, they're going to get their buck.
Right.
Whatever it is, it's legal. It has to have three on one side in where we are, but they're going to shoot that buck, and then they're finished because they want to get back to, I don't know, watching wrestling or, I mean, these are my kid folk. You know, I mean, it's not like, they're not trying to make a season last.
Sure, they want to get some meat.
But they can get a tag every year, where these people out there, I don't know, but yeah, they saw that shot and saw some smaller bucks get killed.
We're talking about Utah, and what part of Utah are you in?
It's
the southern part, wasn't
it? Yeah, I mean,
middle southern?
Middle southern.
Yeah.
About an hour and a half from St. George to the north. It's like, we're kind of west of, if people know where Bryce National Park is, and that we're west of there. Beautiful area.
Yeah.
Really beautiful area. I'm not going to give you the name of it because I've happened to also find a bunch of Merriams in there that don't get hunted a bunch. So May, be heading out there to hunt some turkeys. So.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
You know,
gobblers stand around in yards just like, you know, like nothing's ever happened to them.
Yeah.
And they're right next to public land. Okay. So go ahead.
Yeah. No. So did you ever see a really big one that you
didn't see?
Get on?
I didn't see what, no.
Never
I did,
did
not. I did not.
What was,
I
mean, the biggest one you probably saw?
130 inches.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd sit there, and it's harder to judge them because
deer.
Yeah, and it's harder to judge them too because it's not like I'm a mule deer expert. I've hunted them a good bit now, not a good bit. I've hunted them some for a guy from Mobile, but not like these guys. And you're looking, and you know, the ears are so much wider.
Right.
You know, they. You know, some have real big fork. You'll see a fork gets you excited, and then you get the glass on them in the spot and scope. You're like, yeah, but they don't have much else.
Yeah.
You know, there's one I looked at for longer than another one, had some mass, but the tines were like a dang South Alabama whitetail shorts. But saw a lot of them, saw a lot of deer. Great time out there.
Yeah.
It was a great time. And it's cool country because you could hunt from And the town was about 6,500 feet of elevation, and there's that kind of BLM sagebrush, bitterbrush land down there, which I like hunting. And in an hour, you could be up. I sent you some pictures. I'm up in snow and watching, you know, pretty cool. You're glassing for mule deer at the same time you're watching mountain goats, you know, out there.
Did you see anything else? See any elk or?
No elk. Saw elk, cut elk tracks. It's funny, and talking to my friends out there, they're like, those jokers are hiding. I said, how can a, because this unit that we're hunting is like one of the best elk units in Utah, if not the best.
They kill monsters. They
auction,
they auction off
the tags, the landowner tags for this unit. They say usually start at $80,000 for somebody to buy one.
Man.
That's how good the elk are that come out of there.
Yeah.
And we cut their tracks and everything. Hey, look, but
that's
how
guarantee those, you're going to kill one.
Right. $80,000.
Yeah.
But I mean, how, you know, how they can hide, I don't know. But they said, guys, you're going to be surprised. They're in the thick woods and they're not. I'm like, but they're big.
Yeah.
But cut tracks, but did not see them. So sharp-tailed grouse, sage grouse, mule deer, mountain goats. That's it. Yeah. I mean, squirrels and pine martens, that kind of stuff, but not. Not anything else, but it's still a great trip, great area. Oh, and Merriam's,
Merriam's. You know, my son drove out there a few weeks ago. Probably, I guess he might have been out there when you was out there. I don't know, but he goes out there, takes his truck, and goes riding in the mountains and all that stuff with a bunch of other guys.
Oh, listen, we did that we did that because we have to. I've been worried that I wasn't going to get the deposit back on the Jeep we rented in St. George. I'll show you some pictures of that, too. Maybe we'll put some of those up on the Facebook page. Yeah. Hey, when we come back, Jeff Stone from Stone Arms joins us. Talk about shooting suppressed on your deer rifle. That's next. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have y'all along. Remember, check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So there's the granddaddy, FM Talk 106.5 on Facebook, but also just put that last word there and get another Facebook page where we got more hunting and fishing stuff going on, so check that out. All right, good to get this man on, and, he's a guy that we could talk a lot about shooting, and speaking of which, too, we might talk about a range where you can work on your shooting here getting into deer season. But something that's really special about shooting suppressed out there, you know, a lot of talk about this and doing that, and people think, okay, I'm going to use, you know, an AR or something like that. But deer hunting, you know, or any kind of shooting a rifle when you're hunting, this is – where you don't put on hearing protection. You're at the range, you put on hearing protection. In the woods, you often don't. It's our buddy Jeff Stone from Stone Arms to talk more about that. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
I'm good, man. And I want to talk about that, too, for people as we get started. We're going to hit this again at the end. But, Jeff, can you give them the quick 411 on if they're sitting there going, hey, man, I sure would like to be able to get a silencer, but I know it's a real tedious thing and it takes forever to do. Tell them what I went through here. It took me, y'all, like no time. Jeff, I mean, how does this work?
Well, you breezed right through it, Sean, but let me tell you a story real quick. Thanks to your radio station and you know, me running ads with you and all that, we had a gentleman come in the other day who was 90 years old. Said he avid deer hunter. It was in great shape. Heard the commercial, wanted to buy a silencer, and we had him in and out in about 25 minutes.
Wow.
And this was just the other day, and now he's just waiting on approval, which we should have within a week or two.
So how long does it take, Jeff, once you fill out all the paperwork, how long does it take from the day you fill it out to the day you get it on the average? Because I know some are longer than others.
Well, right now we're kind of not in an average situation because of the government shutdown. However, a week ago they reopened the NFA branch of the ATF. The NFA branch is who processes all the paperwork for your silencers and stuff like that. That's only been about a week, which we've already started getting those approvals back. So before the government shutdown, most people got their silencer within 2 weeks. Sometimes it was in a day or two. So again, we're outside the average box right now, but we are getting approvals right now that were submitted right before the shutdown, and they are catching back up. So right now, we're telling people 2 to 3 weeks as we, you know, get out of this shutdown, at least for the NFA branch, that will continue to get better. Now you got to remember, it used to be a year.
That's right. It took me over a year to get mine.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. And my first one, it took me over a year. Now it's super simple. We walk you through the process. We have the fingerprint kiosk here. You do your passport photo here. You can literally be in and out of the shop within 30 minutes, realistically, and have everything submitted where you're just basically waiting from that point on.
Man, that is so good compared to what it used to be.
And that's what's great when Jeff started talking to me about this, because I had that mindset too. The old mindset, and I would go through the paperwork and not know if I had the right document. You had to go over here,
to the sheriff's department, get your fingerprints over there, and then you go get somewhere to get your photograph.
Yeah, it kept me from doing it, because I was like, dang it.
You had to find a notary.
Yep.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that anymore at all. Yeah.
So,
but
yeah.
We're entering some strange times, though. So I'm sure you know, and they're actually getting ready to, I say they, the ATF is getting ready to officially announce this word on the street just tomorrow, that they're going to discontinue the tax stamp fee only on January 1st. A lot of people are already aware of this. A lot of people are waiting till January to submit their paperwork. We, however, at Stone Arms, we're advising people not to wait until January, though, because then you're going to have another backup in January because of all the submittals you're going to have from the people that are waiting.
So what are they going to do in January, or what are they going to do?
In January, the ATF, it was on the Big Beautiful Bill, they're doing away with the tax stamp fee only. You still have to do all the paperwork, you know, like we just talked about, the fingerprints and all that, your Form 4 submittal. However, the only thing you don't have to do is pay that $200 tax stamp, which is nice.
Yeah,
however,
it is.
Yeah, but think about it. You're going to have they're estimating over 6 million Form 4. Form 4 is basically your tax stamp. That's your license. Form 4, 6 million Form 4 submittals within the first month of 2026.
Whew.
That is going to cause major problems within the system, and the system is called e-forms. Electronic filing. E-forms is going to back up. It could possibly crash, and then they got to get it back online. But either way, and I could be wrong. I will throw that out there. I could be wrong, but I've seen it before where e-forms could get backed up where you're waiting a year again. Now, this is just my speculation, but it's not only mine. Anybody in the industry, we're all predicting, speculating the same results.
And I don't doubt it. There's going to be a lot of people who want to save a couple hundred dollars.
But
no doubt.
But the problem is,
I get it. I respect that. But we tell people, look, this may not be a good thing. Yes, you're saving $200, but you may have to wait a year. And all I'm saying is, if you're trying to get this for hunting season, which is fastly approaching, mm-hmm. and you really want to use this before the end of the season, I would go ahead and do it now.
Do it
pay
now.
$200 and do it now, because it's a game changer. I'll tell you, it is a game changer to be in your stand. If you're hunting with kids, you're out there with people who are maybe sensitive to the noise, and not have to wear hearing protection, and you're not hurting your hearing by shooting suppressed.
All right, let's explain that and what the difference is. I know you use subsonic ammunition, and it's basically no noise. It's just you hear the action.
You don't hear the crack. There's still a noise, but
it's very little noise.
It brings it down to a safe level where you don't need hearing protection.
But then when you use your regular ammunition, your regular stuff, tell us about that.
It depends on the quality of the silencer you purchased or the ammo, and people are different. For example, I shoot supersonic, not subsonic ammo, 308, that's what I hunt with, and I don't need hearing protection. I don't think it's loud enough. Now, I'm not in a shoot house either.
Yeah.
I'm up in a tree, a ladder stand. So that changes, that makes a difference. Also, what people think is, it's like the movies where it's super quiet, and you could take multiple shots on possibly deer or hog. It doesn't work like that. It's for the shooter and the people who are with the shooters and around the shooters. Yes. But when a deer, they don't equate to, hey, my buddy just fell down, to the sound. All they know is their buddy just fell down. And it doesn't matter if what produced him falling down, what made him fall down, was a noise or whatever. They're not that smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things you're saying, it's like people get this, and now that I've been shooting that way, you know, they have the idea that it's going to make no noise. It does make noise, but yeah, and you, I think a good thing Jeff just said, it's about the shooter more than the game. The number of times, and now you're in a ladder, but I've done it in a ladder stand, I've done it at shooting house. You know, do I pack hearing protection in my backpack? I do. But you know how many times when I'm shooting a buck, I put it on? That'd be zero. Yeah. If I'm going to shoot a doe this afternoon, right. I'm going to put it on, do all that stuff. But yeah. A buck comes running out, I'm going to shoot that buck right then. And the amount of times I've shot center fire rifle with no hearing protection in my life is a lot before getting, you know, getting a can.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I remember when I shot my first deer, I didn't even think about bringing hearing protection.
So I shot
a buck, got lucky, and later on we were talking about it, and I was like, you know what? My ears didn't even ring. I don't even remember hearing a shot. And my buddy said, yeah, because of your adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
However, yeah. What you're not thinking about, though, it still damages your ears. Your eardrums are still, you know, getting that shock wave going through them. So it's still long, especially long term, can damage your ears. You know, so what the silencer does, it protects the shooters. It doesn't have anything to do with how the deer or hogs are going to react. All they know is their buddy just fell down. That's not natural, and they're going to run off.
Right. So what percentage do you think that it'll reduce the sound off of, let's just throw out like a 270 Winchester?
Really
R308.
Hard to answer that,
yeah.
But I would say a safe number is 37%. And
yeah.
I've already been asked this before, and I realize you kind of got to answer that to customers, and that's the number we came up with.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, really accurate.
Yeah, well, I'm sure different calibers are going to be different.
Yeah. Barrel length and all that, but it's significant. You know, I've often said,
I
mean, it's a real difference. And it also, for me, and we'll talk about more hunting scenarios in the quiet, but it also makes me want to shoot more. And I don't know if it's it's something about the, you know, I've been a guy that like shoots the deer rifle, get it dialed in, and then I'm going to, you know, then I'm putting it up. I like to shoot the rifle now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's a game changer. And we warn people, look, you buy your first silencer, you're going to buy more because
yes.
it'll spoil you. It'll ruin you. It's like a tattoo. You get one, you're going to want more.
Yeah.
It is an absolute game changer. And it'll turn you into a shooting range snob. You'll be sitting there shooting with your silencer, having the time of your life, not making any noise, and here comes somebody with a cannon, you know, and you pack up and leave.
That's right.
Happens all the time at my range.
Coming right back, more with Jeff Stone from Stone Arms, and we'll talk about Silver Creek Range as well when we return on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our buddy Jeff Stone from Stone Arms, our guest, and talking about shooting silencers, shooting suppressed. And, you know, so much of it is bound around like, oh, okay, I'm going to shoot my AR. We're shooting another platform like that. But holy cow, the big blinking lights to me are deer rifle shooting.
Yes.
I mean, what a great match that is. And we're talking about that with Jeff from Stone Arms, which, by the way, you could get, Jeff hadn't said it yet, but all the stuff we're talking about, you can get at Stone Arms.
That's right.
Rifles and the cans and everything to go with it.
Yeah. You know, one thing we're talking about.
An easy process. We'll walk you through the whole thing and everything. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, one thing we was talking about putting a suppressor on your gun. Let's just say a regular 270 Winchester, you know, and you go and shoot it, and it cuts down the noise level 37%, give or take, whatever. Substantial, you know, makes it where you can shoot it. You don't have to worry about using hearing protection. Now, let's talk about using subsonic and how much it will cut the noise down. And let's talk about the difference if you sight in your gun with subsonic, what you have to do if you go back. If you go back and forth, if you got the same gun, let's say a 270, and you want to use subsonic 270 ammunition, and you want to use your regular 270 ammunition, the process you have to do to go back and forth.
Yeah, your point of impact is going to change, and like with any gun, you need to go sight it in first.
Yes.
To see where your point of impact is. That way, when you're out in the woods, you know where you're going to, you know, take that shot to, you know, humanely take that deer. You're not missing. You're trying to hit it where you want, but it will definitely change your point of impact.
And typically, you know, from what I've seen, Jeff, let's just say using regular ammunition on a 270 and you got it zeroed in at 100 yards, and then you go to the subsonic and put a subsonic bullet in there and shoot it, it's typically going to drop anywhere from 7, 8, 9, 10 inches, give or take.
It could. You're shooting, you know, you're shooting a heavier bullet.
Yes.
You're adding a lot of grain, so yeah, your point of impact is going to normally be lower, typically be lower. My biggest thing is, and I see this every year, and I'm glad, you know, we're doing this today, is a lot of people don't sight in before they go shoot, even on public land.
Yes.
It's to me, it's absolutely crazy. So, you know, people can come to Stone Arms with a gun they did not buy from us, and we'll sight it in. We'll get it. We'll get you on, you know, on paper. We have a laser bore sighter that 9 times out of 10 is dead on.
Yeah.
But you still got to go shoot it. I can't tell you how many times throughout the past 15 years I've been in business where guys are literally on their way to the woods to shoot on public land with a gun that they've never fired.
It's amazing. I know those people. I mean, I've taken them hunting before.
Yeah.
And I get up there and say, you know, you got your gun all sighted in? Well, I sighted it in 3 years ago. It should be okay.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, we had a guy come in last year. He bought a gun from somewhere that day, but they didn't have the ammo for it. He came to us for a box of ammo, and we got to talking, and he said, yeah, I just bought this gun about an hour ago. It was factory bore sighted. I said, let me put it on the bench real quick. And it was barely on the gun. It probably would have fell off if he did shoot it.
No.
Remounted it. I'm not kidding.
Wow. Yes.
Remounted it, bore sighted it, got on paper. And later on, I think it was a couple of days later, he called and he said, no, I didn't go shoot it first. I didn't have time, but I did kill a deer with it, and it was dead on.
How about that?
But I try to remember to call Sean every year to talk about this, and people really need to, now's the time, not on the way to the woods, to get your gun sighted in properly and safely, especially if you're on public land.
Yeah, and talking about back to the subsonic thing too, and I'm real new in this world, right? I've been able to shoot with a silencer. It's the weight of that bullet. For a 300 blackout,
right,
that I have, like, under, and I had, I mean, they do, like, when you go buy your ammo from Jeff, it's marked, like, this one will be, you know, subsonic. But you learn, you go, okay, below this grain for this load is supersonic. Above that grain is going to make it subsonic. And it may be different for the different ammo, but
right.
I kind of learned where it is for 300 blackout. Is that, I mean, that's true of all the rounds,
heavier,
right?
The heavier the bullet is, the slower it's going to.
Yeah, there's, you know, a certain weight where you start hitting subsonic.
Yeah. The grain in the powder plus the grain of the bullet. Is that right?
Right. That's the formula.
Yeah. Slower it's going to be, you know, that you can get it. You know, you get under subsonic, and it's substantially different. You know, like we were talking about on the break, I hunt a property that's approximately 160 acres. Usually when I hunt, there's one other guy out there with me, and we're on opposite ends of the property. Year before last, when I was shooting supersonic, not suppressed, he knew when I shot a deer or missed a deer. He knew.
So there the whole
no
neighborhood.
Doubt. Yeah. Same thing with him. Now that we both shoot suppressed, he'll text me, "Did you? I'm not sure. I think I heard you shoot." He's guessing.
Yes.
And last year I shot a deer. He didn't even hear the shot, he said. So it really makes it a lot quieter. But again,
and that's using regular ammunition, not subsonic.
Regular subsonic.
Regular, not subsonic.
Yeah. Yep. Makes a big difference.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
You were talking earlier about people mainly buying these, silencers, suppressors, whatever you want to call it. It's actually on the paperwork. It's called a silencer on the Form 4. But, disregarding that, most people, believe it or not, that come in to my shop, they're buying silencers for hunting rifles. You would think it's the other way around. They're buying for ARs and all that. It's 9 times out of 10, they want it for a hunting rifle, and a lot of times their hunting rifle is not threaded. We have a gunsmith that will thread it for you as well.
Right.
And that's a big deal. That's why, I talk about what the gunsmith and they do at Stone Arms. It's so great because you can bring in, you don't have to get, I'm sure Jeff would like you to get another rifle, a new rifle, but if you got that 270 you're talking about, that rifle you love,
that's right.
You can thread that one.
That's right.
That's right. And I've had people say, "Well, I want to get one, but my gun's not threaded." It's easy. We thread it. Maybe we'll have to put an adapter on it, but it's not going to affect your accuracy. And another thing is, if it's done right, your gun is actually going to be more accurate because you're lengthening the barrel.
Yep. Hmm. More twist.
Yeah.
Now, ask you this. So, and I know there's this stuff that people need to maybe look at charts on, but when I first started talking about this with Jeff, I'm like, okay, if I get this silencer, this can, what else can I use it on? Right? Because y'all, it's threaded. You can take it out. Kind of give us the layman's guide to that, Jeff. Like,
the easiest way to sum that up real quick is like a 30 caliber can, for example. You can basically use that with pretty much anything you have, even 5.56. So, for example, my 30 caliber can silencer, I call them cans, I have that on a 308 bolt action rifle. I can also put that on a 5.56 AR or a 300 blackout AR, and it works on all three of them, and I got a quick detach for each rifle.
So think about this, y'all. You can, and I'm sure once again, Jeff would like you to get a can for every rifle,
sure.
But if you're thinking, okay, man, I'm going to do this, I'm going to make this investment, you've got different rifle. Well, this is a rifle I might go out west and hunt with. You're right. This is one I use here in Alabama, and I want to be able to shoot my modern sporting rifle too. You can move them from gun to gun.
In most cases, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just got to communicate what you want to try to do, what you have, and we should have something that will work. Especially, if you're willing to get a 30 caliber can and use it on all that. Now, it's not going to work perfect. For example, my 30 caliber can, when I put it on my 5.56, it's quieter than without it, but I don't need hearing protection. But if I put it on my 300 blackout, especially with subsonic ammo, it's substantially more quiet.
That one is unreal. So that's what I've got.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and we could talk about that too. So let's talk specifically, because that round gets some notoriety out there. People talk about it. I'm shooting one, that 300 blackout, and I have supersonic, but I have subsonic, which is just the most fun to shoot. I'm not a guy. I'd like to shoot shotguns, but I shot rifles enough to be proficient, but you get the can, y'all. It changes everything. It's so fun to shoot the rifle. But for hunting with it, I know you and Mike were talking about it. For me, it's a 100-yard gun, right? I mean, when you're shooting subsonic.
Yep, that's right, which is fine for here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
if you're shooting subsonic, and that's a good question we get all the time, a common question. Hey, if I'm shooting subsonic, 308, whatever, it doesn't matter, around here, within 100 yards, is it going to kill a deer? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and if you're going to get serious with it, you just about need to have two or three silencers, because you don't want to go, every time you want to go to regular ammunition, have to go sight your gun back in again. You'd have one on, let's just say, the 300 blackout. You'd have silencer on it to use subsonic. Let's say you had another 300 blackout that you just like shooting long distance with, then you'd have a silencer on it. Because if you don't, when you switch from one grain bullet to another, you're going to have to go sight your gun in back and forth.
Or know where to set your, you know, your scope.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you could have two. Really, I mean, like two sets of marks, you know, if you wanted to.
Sure.
Well, you could.
But I mean, But I'm thinking.
It really depends on what, you know, what you're able to do within your budget.
Yeah, yes. But I'm thinking about the beauty of being able to. It's not about like, okay, this rifle, like 300 blackout, I'm going to shoot suppressed in it. But that can I can take off and put on a deer rifle that's also been sighted.
Right.
Coming right back. More with Jeff Stone from Stone Arms right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Our buddy Jeff Stone from Stone Arms talking about quieting things down while you're hunting. When you're hunting and on the range, and I can tell you, it's an addictive thing, too. Jeff, that dang Jeff Stone getting us involved in shooting suppressed. Man, I tell you what, I really do. I mean, I'm a guy who now likes to shoot center fire rifle.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
just for it changes everything.
It'll spoil you.
100%. You know, something we were talking about during the break, Mike. You and Mike were talking about it too, and that is the range, because this is new to a lot of people, man. Right? So I mean, when I got in there and I took your advice, which is great, looking at different cans, but I didn't come in having a preconceived notion or opinion of what brand I wanted or, you know, those kind of things.
Is there different qualities of them?
That's right. It can also be intimidating. Like, if you get online and try to do your research, there's a lot of technical information out there. Decibel levels, gas, blowback. There's a lot of stuff that people, they start reading it, and they're like, I don't have time for this.
That sounds like me.
I'll be honest with you. People come in all the time and say, hey, what's the best can? My answer to that is usually, first, What are you going to do with it? What caliber? All that. And most people, they want a multiple use can, which would be a 30 caliber can. I recommend the cheapest one, the least expensive one we have. And then I say, are there ones that are better? Are there ones that are lighter? Are there ones that have less blowback? Yes, but you got to be able to, you know, willing to do some of your own research on that. You know, we can further answer those questions. But you don't have to spend a lot of money. Like the one I have, the one that I purchased is $595. There are ones that cost, you know, $1,500 or more. Are those ones better? Sure they are. But are they so much better where you have to spend that money? And in my opinion, the answer is no.
So what would be the difference between those two, Jeff?
The biggest difference is blowback, the gas coming back at you. Or, you know, it being a little bit quieter. But it's really hard to answer that without specifically talking about one brand and model to another one.
Yeah.
But for your average person, though, hey, I'm going to sight my rifle in, I'm going to shoot a couple deer a year, you don't need to spend a lot of money on a silencer. You really don't. Now, take the, like a lot of guys that shoot on the 1,000-yard range at Silver Creek Range. They're out there all the time. You know, they're taking notes, they're really into it, and they're putting a lot of rounds down range. They're probably going to spend a little bit more money.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably going to be in the $1,200 range or more for a silencer. But for your average person hunting rifle, like we're talking about today, you can spend $600 on a silencer, and you're going to be really happy with the results.
Awesome.
And another side, when you get into this, is, you know, we keep saying, like, it brings that volume down. It reduces the volume for hearing safety. But if you do want to get the what they do in the movies stuff, which is unrealistic, unless you get in like rimfire. Y'all talk about like 22s here and shooting them with a can.
So it's funny, when I get to my range in the mornings, I park, and some of the ranges that are to the west of where I park, I can't really see from, you know, I have to drive down there because the range is so spread out. So I don't know if anybody's there or not. Meanwhile, I'm, you know, unpacking my gear, getting ready to do what I got to do, and I'll hear, ting, ting, and I don't hear the gunfire. That
you
tells
hear it
me
hit.
Somebody's up at, somebody's shooting rimfire at steel targets, and that's all you hear.
Yeah. Is the impact
right
of the bullet.
To them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you get the, what it sounds like in the movies, and it's a great, it's so much fun. When I go out there and just want to plink, I got a .22 rifle with a $300 silencer on it, and it's so much fun. And it's a great way to get kids involved in it, especially if they're noise sensitive.
That's great.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your range for a second. Where is your range, and how do you get to it? I mean, what? Tell us about your range, everything about it.
So it's in Chunchula. It's off of 45. It is a membership range only. Right now, we are capped off. We're on a waiting list, which is something new, but we have four people currently on the waiting list. It should start opening back up, and I'm anticipating in November to start bringing in a couple more members. If someone was interested in applying, all they got to do is come to Stone Arms. Just call up first to make sure I'm there. Fill out an application, meet with me, and I'll put them in the queue. But there's nine ranges. They're all independent. It's all spread out. Over 160-acre range. There's multiple ranges, including the 1,000-yard range. You can move and shoot. You can rapid fire. There's steel targets everywhere. It's a really special place that's a lot different from any other range anywhere around because you can move and shoot, and all the ranges are independent.
Huh. And what does that cost, a membership?
So we do... 6 months for 180 or 250 a year for like veterans, first responders, law enforcement, all that, or it's 300 for everybody else. And that's every day. It's your range. It's your house. You can bring guests. There's no daily range fee. You don't have to call me when you're going to the range. It's your house. You get the gate code. You let yourself in. You shoot. You clean up. You're safe. You let yourself out. And it's your range.
That's not bad at
all. Yeah, and it's great to have. I mean,
and it's range, not far.
Yeah, not far. You got all those different opportunities. Plus, we don't have time because we got like 45 seconds left in the show, but the long range stuff is so big, and to have a range to be able to shoot long range is really special.
It's 1,000-yard range, and it's never crowded. A lot of people, he's capped off. He must be too crowded. That's why I capped it off, so it doesn't get too crowded.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
So, and we're talking about Silver Creek Range and the location. As we close it out here, Stone Arms, where do they go?
West Mobile, on Airport, just a quarter mile west of Snow Road on the left-hand side as you're going west.
Good stuff. Jeff, we appreciate it, man, and thank you for those tips, and we'll be talking again, I imagine, pretty soon.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good talking to you guys. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll do it again next week. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Y'all have fun.